Happy Tuesday, and welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And before we get started this week, I wanted to take a moment to share with you my deep sadness regarding the passing of Daniel Quinn, award-winning author of Ishmael, The Story of Bee, Beyond Civilization, and 17 other novels. His work and his words changed the course of my life in many ways and influenced the lives of millions of people over the last 25 years. A year ago, I had the opportunity to spend time with Daniel Quinn at his home in Houston, Texas. We spent 2 days talking about his life, his work, his unique views and perspectives on the world as they were first expressed through the words of Ishmael. And if you haven't read it yet, please take the time to read Ishmael. And if you'd like to listen to our conversation, it's posted on my Facebook page, and it's also available at kcbx.org under Programs. We recently re-aired the program in December, so it'll be easy to find. At this time, my thoughts and love go out to Daniel's wife, Rennie, and I'm sure that his work will continue to influence many for decades to come. Today, we head off in another direction. Instead of opening up the phone lines to take your calls, I'm going to share with you a conversation I had recently with Chris Burkhart, accomplished adventurer, photographer, speaker, author, and most recently, a filmmaker. Chris has experienced much success in his short 31 years, and it would probably be easy to just flat out envy his seemingly charmed life. He's a handsome man, married to his beautiful high school sweetheart, Brianne. They have 2 healthy sons, and they live in the happiest place in America. Chris travels the world documenting and exploring the world's most remote and wild places, capturing stories that inspire people to consider their relationship with nature. He's worked as a senior staff photographer for multiple magazines. He was named Red Bull Illume Photographer of the Year multiple times. He won an X Games gold medal for photography. He's authored numerous books, including The California Surf Project, which started out his career, and his children's book, The Boy Who Spoke to the Earth. Chris received accolades for his TED Talk, and he spent much of the last year touring and promoting his film, Under the Arctic Sky, which was the most attended screening at the Tribeca Film Festival last year. Chris is also an easy guy to hang out with. He's kind, he's warm, he's approachable, and he's easy to talk to. So yes, it would be easy to just assume that Chris is a lucky guy and write it off to that, but that would vastly sell short the sheer force of nature that Chris is. He's driven, he's focused, he's incredibly hardworking, he's intense, he's dedicated to excellence in all of his pursuits. He's never sitting still. He's a whirlwind of energy at all times. And that's why I always like checking in with Chris, because he's an incredible inspiration. Here's this ordinary local kid who followed his interests and curiosity and has done extraordinary things with his life. Chris absolutely walks his talk, and he truly understands the value and necessity of hard work and perseverance and grit in attaining any dream. And when it comes to the tenets of good mental health and well-being, meaningful work, deep connected relationships, service to others, and good health, Chris strives to keep them all in balance. And so I sat down with Chris at his bustling, multi-use gallery, studio, office, community gathering space in Pismo Beach to talk about his life and his values and where do you go from here when you seem to have done it all. And although we won't be taking your calls today, you can still share your thoughts on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to our previous shows at kcbx.org or subscribe to the podcast through Apple Podcasts or NPR One. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Chris Burkhart, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Road tripping with my 2 favorite allies. Fully loaded, we got snacks and supplies. It's time to leave this town, it's time to steal away. Let's go get lost anywhere in the USA. Let's go get lost, let's go get lost.
How are you?
I'm good. All right, so since the last time we talked, you were just getting ready to do a TED Talk.
I think it was after, actually.
Was it after?
Yeah, it was months after.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where have you been and what has been happening since we last chatted?
Well, that's a complex question, to be honest. I would say it's what been over a little over a year, a year and a half. The last, year we've been all over the world. I'm trying to jog my memory right now, and it's becoming a little fuzzy. But I've done probably multiple trips to Iceland, because I'm there every year, and we've been to Greece. We've been to done a lot of shoots in the Pacific Northwest. Been all over the place, but mostly my time and effort has been put to making this film project come to life. It was a film about surfing under the Northern Lights, and so that's been a huge basically part of my time has really been to touring that film and bringing it to life, and it's been a little overwhelming. So
when we last talked, though, you didn't say anything about the movie. Like, what's the genesis? Was that always in your plan to have this movie, or did it just kind of come to you because you'd done the book and you'd been touring with photos, but I'd never heard anything about doing the actual movie?
So the film was shot in 2015,
okay,
and 2016 over the winter. And essentially when we started the project, it was just something fun, it wasn't really meant to be anything, big or long-term or anything like that. And the reality is that it kind of just evolved like anything else good, it sort of naturally progressed. And ultimately what ended up happening was, over the course of that year and a half, we realized just how valuable of a project this was, that we really wanted to see it come to life. And so we ended up investing more time and more energy and more money into it. And it became kind of its own separate beast. And I think that its acceptance into Tribeca Film Festival was what really made us have a big awareness of just how valuable it could be. And so that it's been kind of an eye-opening experience. It's like the most expensive college education you never wanted, and that's kind of what it's been like for me. But I've learned an immense amount of information from just doing the project and being a part of it and everything.
When we talked last time, one of the things we were talking about was like, how do you describe who you are? Because you're not a surf photographer anymore. I mean, maybe you've started that adventure. So I guess my question is twofold. How do you define who you are these days, the work you're doing?
I guess it's best to just not define it. I don't try to define it because it doesn't really, because to be honest, I don't really want to be tied down by something. If you become known for one thing, you just pigeonhole yourself, right? and so over the last couple of years, the work has really evolved. I think that's the most interesting thing for any young creative, is that for me, I try to look at the work I do in terms of what I can control and what I can't control. And what I can control are things like social media and, the books that we do, the stuff that I put out personally, and the quality and how that's done. But what I can't control is like speaking assignments and commercial photography and things of that nature. So that there's this big kind of aspect of, if the economy crashes, God forbid, like there's certain things that I can't really control, the type of work that might not come or might come, but there's other things that I can have more of a hand in. So I always try to think of it like, there's all of these different avenues in which you can really push yourself creatively and kind of become a specialist at. And it's really a matter of just like, which ones do you want to define you?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So,
well, the reality is I'm not a filmmaker. Okay. I made a film. Doesn't make me a filmmaker. I have no desire to make more films. It was a storytelling opportunity. We saw this amazing story and we wanted to tell it. And unlike a book or a print or a social media or something along those lines that I've done in the past, magazine article, this was the best way to tell the story. So that's all I really do, whether it's for brands, Fortune 500 companies, or I'm shooting something for Apple or Microsoft or whomever. We're always just trying to tell a story in the best way we know how. And so the reality is that's what I try to become good at. If there's a label, I don't really care about labels or not. It doesn't really make a difference to me, because it's not like somebody putting a label on me is going to stop what I'm doing or this and that, that's kind of an arbitrary conversation. So it's sort of one of those things where I'm just trying to pursue what it is I enjoy and what it is I enjoy doing, and however and whatever sort of rabbit hole that puts me down, wonderful. This year I've been able to, be in a situations that are totally unique for me and different and wonderful and challenging and creative and in a lot of different ways than I ever envisioned. And that was a really fun experiment. Doesn't necessarily mean I want to be that for the rest of my life and try to rub shoulders with these people or those people to try and, work in that industry. But the truth of the matter is, I think it's important for any person, You know, it doesn't matter if you have the most amazingly, seemingly amazing job on the planet. At some point, it'll get boring or mundane. I think somebody said that in a TED Talk once.
Mm-hmm. I think you did.
Yeah. And so I think the important thing is just like for myself, it's like I have to force myself to try new things, mm-hmm. especially in our careers, especially in our business. You know, it's the same reason why relationships get stale and business becomes mundane or whatever, because we become complacent, right? And so for me, like this whole experience making this film was just an experience to try do something new and try to put myself in a situation that was a little more that was really awkward and challenging, and and I am the first person to tell anyone that I have no idea what I'm doing, you know, and that's like a good thing to be back at square one, like in preschool, mm-hmm. you know, just having no clue what you're doing.
So how has the response been? I mean, because I'm thinking of the old Warren Miller film days. Is that the kind of audience that people are coming out that love surf movies? Or
you know, it's really broad, to be honest. I don't think that it's been something where there's just been fans of surfing, to be honest. It's been more about like people who love to travel, people who love the Arctic, people who love you know, adventure, whatever it is. Like almost every single tour stop has been sold out. You know, and the reality is that there's a huge appetite for stuff like this, and you know, this film was a once in a lifetime opportunity to tell a story about something that was really unique. And so there's not like you're going to see it somewhere else. You're not going to see the same story told somewhere else. So
you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is surf lifestyle and adventure photographer, author, and filmmaker Chris Burkhart.
The project itself, you said, is a story. And for people who haven't had a chance to see the film, can you tell a little bit about the story of the film?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It started out as just a magazine assignment. I was on staff for Surfer Magazine. One of my jobs at Surfer Magazine was to kind of plan these big, large-scale expeditions. And years ago, we had found this location in the northwest fjords of Iceland that we thought was incredible. The potential was amazing, but getting there was immensely challenging. We're talking, you know, rough seas. You're going to a remote national park. You can only get there by boat. The closest landmass besides Iceland is Greenland on the North Pole. And so you're dealing with going there in the middle of winter, the darkest, roughest time of year. And you can imagine, you know, being a couple like willing souls from California and Florida and wherever our crew is from, this was out of our scope. You know, this was wild. And so we found this boat captain who was willing to take us out there. And we got out there after 3 years of planning and, you know, looking for the right window, the right time, the right place, et cetera, et cetera. We got there and it was like a storm literally was just right at our heels. And we saw the wave, we saw what we came to find. And it was interesting because the story kind of started as being this, you know, age old, you know, tale of going and finding new surf. And we wanted to talk about the captain and his experience because this guy was a total badass, right? He had sailed to Jan Mayen and all over the Arctic and Greenland. And so we really want to tell the tale from his perspective. But literally we got turned around. Like the storm was right at our heels. We had to go back. And the storm basically turned out to be the largest storm in 25 years. And the story changed. You know, it changed into being about the importance of these relationships that you forge in these wild places. And because we ended up enduring that storm and sticking around and getting through it, we were presented with this opportunity to surf under the northern lights, and you know, everything else you'll have to just see when you see it. So
the film is out, you're touring behind it, Kickstarter helped fund this. Like, it's not as if you've gotten yourself to a place where people are throwing money at you to do things. Like, you're
thing was 100% self-funded. It was it cost $250,000, and it was funded by myself and my production partner, who basically just came in halves. There's no big corporations, big mm-hmm. companies to did this. It was just myself. And the reality is, you know, if the project wasn't as high risk, we easily could have gotten a check from somebody. But it was high risk. You know, you're telling somebody, hey, we're going to go there. The chances of success are very low. Do you want to be a part of this? And they're like, you know, that's a hard sell to get people excited about. You know, that is the hardest thing, is like, you know, selling something through when you know that you could fail.
But which is one of the things I love about how your whole trajectory of your career has been, is that from the beginning, when you first set out in the bus to do the very first book, it was just an idea that you self-funded and mm-hmm. came to fruition. I mean, you continued 10, 12 years into it still having an idea.
It'd be nice to get some funding at some point.
Exactly. At some point you think maybe everyone buys into your crazy ideas, but you're still...
It's funny. There's this like really weird disconnect between people. Maybe it's just the younger generation where they think, oh man, you have 2.7 million Instagram followers. Don't you just make a living off that? And I'm like, no, I don't. And I don't want to. Like that'd be a weird way to make a living, you know? Like I work like any other human being, and my job has really very little to do with social media. You know, this is just a outlet, you know, and I it's confusing to me people that do make their living off of social media. It doesn't make sense to me. Like I've been lucky enough to use it to promote certain things that I'm doing, but in the end, like everything that I'm doing comes from sources way outside of that. So, yeah.
Well, and I've noticed that your presence on social media seems to have diminished. Like you haven't been on Snapchat as much as you had been in the past. Is it because you're busy with other things, or do you kind of steer away?
I want to avoid having them own me and not me own them, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So what's the next thing? Because you always are working. There's always something that's on the horizon for you. Where's your interest?
I go to Norway on Saturday.
Okay.
I'm in a commercial for Lufthansa Airlines. And then I'm going to Greenland. And then I go to India. And then I go back to Iceland. And then at some point there, I come home.
Yeah. And so let's talk about home. Mm. How do you, you know, you've got two sons now.
Mm-hmm.
You're married. You have a home. How does this all fit and work for you?
Well, I mean, like home is the place that I want to be the most. The reality is I'm usually home a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know, I think most people have this idea that I travel like 9 to 10, 9 months out of the year, but I don't. You know, I normally I'm home for a month and gone for 4 to 5 days mm-hmm. at a time. But the truth of the matter is that this year with the film, I knew that in order to see this thing through, you know, like I said, I'm not funded by a huge production company or a studio or whatever, and so a distribution company. So it was me, you know, taking this thing out on the road, and I knew that in order to really maximize it, I had to see it through, and I had to make the time and take the time to go and tour this thing, and it was going to be a massive investment. And that's just the same thing. If anybody, people always ask me about like writing books or publishing books or making films, and I'm like, if you don't have the capital or the time to devote to it, don't do it. Because mm-hmm. it's never going to be what you think it's going to be. You know, this is why people go to massive distribution companies or publishers or you know, studios to do these things, because they don't want to see it through themselves, right? Well, it's a little different when you're doing this personally. You know, you're investing a lot of your own time, blood, sweat, and tears to make it happen, so.
And you've moved into this new space here too, that's kind of looks like it's multifaceted. You have a studio in the front where you look like you're selling things.
Yeah, and then our gallery there, and then in the back is our studio, our production studio, where we plan and execute all of our trips, and we have all of our gear, and we also do big events here. So we have a 300 person, you know, venue outside where we show films, and it's been really fun. Like that was always my dream, was to like do something and create a space that I could give back to the community and do events. And we did a film screening where the cost of admission was bringing a can for the homeless shelter. We do beach cleanups. Like when I'm home, I want to be involved. Mm-hmm. And I think that's to get back to your question about being home. Like I choose and chose to stay in a small town mm-hmm. because I love what it provides. You know, it provides access to places without traffic and these kind of empty little nooks and beaches. And I'm 5 minutes from the ocean, you know, where I live. And you know, I could make more money living in Los Angeles, or I could make more money living somewhere else. But the reality is the quality of life would be dramatically different.
So what is the vision you have? You know, a lot of people have kind of that mission statement or that thing that drives them. And what is it you're hoping that all of your travel and photography and exposure to wild places gives to the world? Like, what do you feel like you're
doing? That's a great question. I'll tell you what, I'm a big, big proponent of mission statements. I've every workshop I teach, I tell people the very first 5 minutes, like, if you don't have a mission statement, you don't have a thesis for your work or an umbrella that everything can live underneath, then you don't really have a roadmap. You don't know where you're going, right? And I would say for me, it's been really interesting because I'll be the first person to admit it's hard to determine. In the beginning of my career, all I cared about was traveling and collecting a paycheck and the stamps in my passport. Mm-hmm. And that was enough. You know, it's okay. It's okay to selfishly work or travel because I just wanted to know what was out there. But after a period of time, you realize that after spending time in these places that mean so much to you, and you feel a sense of responsibility to want to protect them. And I feel like for me, travel has been the greatest form of education. You know, mm-hmm. It has really opened my eyes to what's out there and what the world means. And I really aim to inspire people not to just talk to them about what I care about or preach to them about what to vote for, but I really want them to go and experience these places for themselves so they can foster a connection to them. And hopefully then they'll be inspired to want to protect them. And I think that, you know, those two things, travel and conservation, have been probably at the very heart and core of what I do. And it's what drives me in the end. You know, it's what makes me feel like those long hours are worth it, because I can motivate people to go. And the beauty is that, you know, I think if people were to see a bit more of this world and to see a bit more of what was out there, it would suffocate, I think, a lot of the issues that we have today, and the issues that you see in our communities, in our country and whatnot.
I think getting the right people out to see places is the key, because there's the certain people who have the power to make change, and I wonder if they've ever been to a wild place in their life.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one, because if you start to look at things like, you know, traveling is only accessible for the privileged few, then that's a dangerous road to go down, you know, because the reality is that, you know, even if somebody goes to the rim of the Grand Canyon with a selfie stick and they take a picture, at least they got outside. Mm-hmm. At least they weren't sitting in their house playing video games or watching movies. And, you know, maybe their goal for going there was totally selfish. I can relate to that. Mm-hmm. But the point is they did it, and that experience is going to work in them, and they might go back. And the next time they'll go maybe a little further down the trail. And the next time maybe they'll go all the way to the Colorado River. And then they'll find themselves immersed in it. And at a certain point in time, you know, you can't really distinguish the person who's out there seeking out a place and fostering a connection to it, because that's the person that ultimately protects it. Mm-hmm. It's not the locals who just a couple of them go and experience this place and keep it private. Like, it's a really hard thing, because access and social responsibility has become a big issue in the last couple of years. But the truth of the matter is that it's tourists that ultimately are the ones that vote for these places to become protected, right? And so I feel like, yeah, we don't necessarily need the masses, but we do need people going out and experience these places in mass. It's just a matter of how they're doing it, right? If it's just everything's enabled for them to drive through and never get out of their car, then that's a shame. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you're able to get people to get out and get on their own 2 feet and experience these places, I think that their connection with them will hopefully become deeper, you know.
So is there a part of you, almost like that, an earth mother or an earth father thing, that you've been to these fragile places around the world and that now you feel kind of this responsibility or anxiety to protect it, you know, almost like a nurturing
parent? I think the word protection is a very complex word, because mm-hmm. I don't feel like this need to want to protect it in the sense that I don't want others to go there. No, that's not exact. In fact, just the opposite. I want people to go there, and I want to do my best I can to educate them on how they should be treated, and by example, of mm-hmm. course, and how they should be cared for. And you know, the reality is that a lot of the places I go, I've seen tourism do disastrous things to the country, you know. And what ends up happening is that people go to these places, you know, Iceland, for example, is one of them, and they travel the same six-hour stretch. And what's happened is that six-hour stretch of coast is gorgeous, but it's become so impacted by people. And the truth of the matter is there's so much more beauty around the entire island, but all the marketing and all the promotion and all the et cetera, has been focused on this area. Why? Because it's accessible and it's easy. Mm-hmm. You could drive another hour in another direction and see something that's far more stunning, but it's not promoted, right? And so I think that the key thing is when I go there, I make sure I do my part to like share these other locations that maybe don't get as much attention. That if you spread this out, you spread this mass, you know, exodus, you know, this mass like tourism out, that it would actually spread around and be a lot more evenly distributed. And it would actually benefit the country, its economy as a whole, a lot better, instead of forcing farmers and people to move to this one area and make it more impacted, right? So I just always see it as like a responsibility of those who travel, you know, like look at where you're going and what you're shooting and what you're saying about these places, and use your voice to express something more than just, you know, some dead poet's, you know, comments that the mountains are calling and you must go. That means mm-hmm. nothing.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Chris Burkhart, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
funny because I'm listening to you talk and I'm having these real feelings of contradiction. Because part of me is like, I don't, you know, one of my concerns about the Central Coast is I don't want people spreading out more. And, you know, I want to have the things that are pristine around here stay pristine. And being in Juneau this summer and seeing the cruise ships pull up and then the tourists do the same trip, it's like it keeps them limited so that the people who are established there still have their sacred spaces. And so I'm a little conflicted with that idea that
you
we want
to be conflicted. If you aren't conflicted, then you probably don't have a soul. You know, look at Carrizo Plains, one of the national monuments that's up for environmental review. What do you think is going to protect that? Just a couple locals going out there and taking photos? No, it's going to be people actually going out and experience it. And here's the problem. For years, people have wanted to keep these places private.
Right.
And now, what are we dealing with? Oh, well, all that privacy that we kept it and the fact that we didn't maybe open it up and talk about it and share about it, it created the adverse effect. Now they're up for environmental review because people, and now what's happening is people are trying to promote them. Oh, look at this place. It's beautiful. Right. Like, what about the last 40 years
right.
when you've been climbing there and seeing the wildflowers and this and that? Now some mass push to, like, make them special is going to change things. One thing I've realized is that it is a contradiction because people don't care about what they don't experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
So the hardest thing ever is, like, it's about finding common ground. And it's about hoping that people can actually go experience things. One of the things I've found is that you're right, I'm with you. Like, I don't want certain places around the coast to become more busy, more complex, but by just the nature of humanity, they're going to be. So in a way, it's a matter of, like, okay, well, what would be a more benefit? Would it be a more benefit to try to, you know, promote that these places need proper trail systems and maybe some so that they don't get worn out to the point where they are unusable,
mm-hmm.
you know, or they're overused or they're whatever. And just educating people to pack in what they pack out, you know, that is the most mind-blowing thing is that a lot of the places that I think are super sacred have trash all over the place. That's not sacred. That's not people treating them well. What might treat them a little better is if they were actually... there was some legislation there that, like, formed it into an actual place. You know, Pirates Cove, for example, one of my favorite places, trash and other really weird things everywhere. You know, I go down there and I see a lot of people who say it's sacred. They don't walk out with a bottle in their hand.
No.
And that bums me out. So it's just the harsh reality of, like, you know, I sometimes think that maybe sometimes seeing those mass amounts of people there might actually incite, you know, a little more vigor in us to, like, maybe want to protect it. And I do think that in Yosemite and a lot of these places where cruise ships, I'm not a big fan of cruise ships or tour buses. That's not the right way to travel. I would opt to maybe even limit the amount of those things that could travel anywhere, because I think that people will experience, and this is a quote from Edward Appiah, I'm totally stealing, but I think he says people will experience more in a mile in nature by horse, foot or bicycle than they ever will by car, you know, or by boat, right? So I think a big part of that is, like, getting people out there to experience a place, not just be observers on the sidelines.
I know, and I was watching the people kind of come off the tour boats in Juneau and wander around to the same little, you know, strip.
Yeah, shops.
Shops.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, in one way, yes, we're exposing them to this beauty and hopefully they'll go back and they'll want to protect. But at the same time, it's almost like Disneyland to them. Like,
is.
They're not really immersed. It's
no.
It's
no
almost
immersion.
That is my ongoing concern and the feelings of contradiction. It's like, on one hand, we're saying, let's get people out. And
I don't think it's about mass amounts. I mean, we're talking mass. I'm just talking about, like, you know, it doesn't need to be on everybody's radar.
Yeah.
You know,
because look at Iceland. Iceland's changed since you the first time you went there. And
it hasn't. It hasn't, though.
But the amount of people that are traveling there.
In one area.
It's just, okay.
That's the reality.
Yeah.
There's areas.
So they're literally flying
every
in.
Every time I go,
yeah.
I'm surrounded by not a single soul.
Yeah.
It's just, here's the thing. People, and it's my generation, has defined the way they travel
mm-hmm.
by if they go to the places that others have been. If they can tick those off their list. They almost feel like it's unsuccessful if they go somewhere and, oh, I didn't see that place. I didn't see that waterfall. Well, where's the, you know, there's a need for uncertainty. You go to somewhere and you don't know what you're going to get. And you just, you find something different. You go somewhere that you haven't heard of or read of because you just want to see it. That is what I set out to do. The very first time I went to Iceland, like, almost a decade ago, that was what I set out to do. Everything was new. Everything was eye-opening. I had no idea. You know, the internet was barely a tool I was using, you know. And so I was, you know, it was still back in the days when you go to the library and you look at things and like try to figure it out. So that mindset, that mentality, is something that I really want to instill in others. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the whole purpose of me touring the film, we talk about the need for uncertainty in our lives. Mm-hmm. We talk about the importance of uncertainty. When you embrace uncertainty, there's a space that's created, and that's the space where the unknown can occur, mm-hmm. right? And that's the space that you grow in right there. Like those are the lines. If you go somewhere and you're simply experiencing the same things others have done, expecting new results, I'm pretty sure that that's like what?
The definition of insanity.
Insanity, right? Like it's the definition of insanity. And so it's kind of this funny thing where I've done it too. Mm-hmm. You know, and as a photographer, you go somewhere, you stand at the same perspective and you expect a different result. You hope for a different result. It's not going to happen. So I always find like, am I putting myself into a new situation? You know, and that's what I think everybody needs to do as a traveler. Like, it's not about going and seeing the same sites. Yeah, see them, zip through, cool, awesome. You don't need to build your whole trip around that, you know?
And everyone wants it to be sanitized and safe. That's the other thing, is that people want their wild adventures to be safe, to be guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
You know,
because exactly what you found in making the movie, which you set out to do, turned out to be not safe and sanitized at all.
The exact opposite of safe. That was like freeze to death in your car at -20 while 80-mile-per-hour winds blow at you. That was a harsh reality. But then again, that's like what most of the trips that I do, I try to encompass as some level of adventure. You know, if you're not taking a risk, then it's not really worth going. But
of course, I think there's a lot of people listening thinking, I don't want my children to hear him say that.
Well, there probably is a lot of things I don't want me to tell them, say like, I didn't go to college and I quit my job and this and that. But the truth of the matter is there's, you know, everything I've done is calculated risk. Going to Iceland 29 times has allowed me to put myself in situations that I feel comfortable in, and being with people that I trust and locals that know this area. How much better to be out there in a dangerous situation than be driving on the 405 freeway, which is probably more dangerous, and to have come back with something that you learned from and a story to tell.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. My guest today is Central Coast local Chris Burkhardt, and we're talking about his life as an award-winning photographer, author, filmmaker, and world adventurer. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
So what I'm hearing is two things going on. One is that you, Chris Burkhardt, have defined a life path for yourself that is completely off the mainstream, that you're really proud of, that in some ways you're defining how to create a life of meaning and value and purpose that's not predetermined.
I know what works for me, and I don't aim to tell anybody else what works for themselves, because like I said, I've never, every stage I've ever stood on to speak, whether it's been for IBM or the TED stage or for our film or whatever, you know, I usually will tell people, like, I'm not here to preach to you what to care about, what to vote for. All I can do is share with you what I love and what I fear losing. Mm-hmm. And if that inspires you to go and experience it for yourself, then to me, that's success. No accolade of a cover or an award for my work is ever going to really justify the fact that I truly want people to go experience these places, because that's what makes them into conservationists and or people that love nature like I do, right? That's all I really care about.
But it's become a life path, no college degree, you know, quitting a job. Like it's in order to get to this place where you found this passion.
I think you almost could go to college for sure and do what I do.
I'm trying to push you out the other direction.
Well, and I guess it's just a byproduct.
Are you okay if your sons follow your path?
Yeah. I don't care at all. They can do whatever they want. Yeah. I plan to save as much money for them to basically offer them to, hey, I can pay for your college education, or I can pay for you to go on a trip somewhere. But I want to make sure that trip you go on, or that place you go on, you're going to come back with something meaningful to show for it, or you're going to come back with a story to tell, or you're going to come back having learned something. I'm a huge, huge fan of education. I did, you know, I paid my own way to do multi-month long internships. Mm-hmm. Where I learned and studied under photographers. Even now, I have somebody here at the office today who's going to take us through a tutorial of using an app that we use for photography. So education is a lifelong goal. Absolutely. It's the perspective that our generation and our government has put on it, and sadly the parents, you know, mm-hmm. that have forced it into this 4-year, 6-year, 8-year,
right, this linear
life trip. Sentence, mm-hmm. you know. And I see so many people, and I'll tell you what, I interact with a lot more people my age than most adults do, so I'm sorry, but the one thing that I come away with is that people are confused, they don't use their degree, they don't know why they went to school, and they feel like they're behind. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad thing, you know, and I feel in some ways the same way too, because I was going down a similar path and trying to appease my parents who wanted me to go to school, and I had to fight them for years. You know why? Because I had scholarships and I had the ability to go to school for free, but I didn't choose to. And they constantly were like, you know, you're limiting yourself, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And, you know, for my specific type of work I wanted to do, there wasn't an education. But hey, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a lawyer, if you want to be a lot of other things, there is a great education system out there for you. I just don't necessarily think that the one way we can look at educating ourselves is through college.
Well, and you just said lifetime learning. You're mm-hmm. constantly, in order to keep up with the right. work you're doing, have to educate yourself. Yeah. And you haven't gotten to your plateau.
No, I don't think either of us have.
No.
You've learned, you're probably learning more now than ever, you know, and the beauty is that I feel like what we've created is a society of kind of like robots, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We learn what we learn and then we keep to ourselves. And what I found is where I learn the most is from other people. Mm-hmm. It's from communicating. And so what we've done is we've gained this plethora of information, but we've failed how to learn how to communicate.
Yeah.
And we've lost the art of storytelling, and we've lost the art of conversing with different cultures, even if there's a language barrier. And that's the hardest thing. When I teach workshops in the middle of Greenland or Iceland, they have nothing to do with cameras. It's all about how to tell stories, how to dive into cultures, look for the unique perspective you can bring home, whether we're hiking through an island full of nesting birds or we're shooting the Northern Lights or whatever. I want them to learn the beautiful craft of being able to come back and share a story. Reason being is because when I was young, my mom sacrificed everything for me to have me when she was super young and you know, and basically raised me up. And so I always wanted to come back and share the places I had been with her through the photographs and the stories. So I forced myself to figure out how to tell stories so that I could come back and be like, hey, mom, you know, here's where I was. And, you know, I knew that she's one of those people who will never be able to go there just because of the sacrifice she had to make and for myself and my brother. So it's just, we're all born out of our own experience, you know? And I think at a certain point, everybody learns that sufficing yourself and just going out to these places mm-hmm. just for your own knowledge, it becomes very meaningless. Mm-hmm. You know, it took me a couple of trips to really realize what the world had to say and had to offer. And I realized that now my greatest joy is to share those experiences with other people. Mm-hmm. You know, started with my mom. Now it's my kids and my wife. Everyone else is just kind of, you know, they're out there too. They're important as well. So.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Chris Burkhart, multi-talented artist, photographer, and adventurer, and we're talking about the art of storytelling through different media platforms. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
The theme of storytelling has come up, you know, storytelling through the movie, storytelling through your pictures, and Chris Burkhart is a storyteller. I mean, that art of conversation.
When you say my name, it just sounds weird.
Does this sound strange? I know. Yeah. I don't even think me. I'm saying it correctly, am
no,
I?
No, you are saying okay. it. It's just me saying it's weird.
Because it's like every time a thing.
Every time I hear my name, it's weird. I don't like hearing
it. Because it's a thing, like in lights now and on all sorts of places.
But it's on beanies.
It's on beanies. It's on no. wear. It's on backpacks. But I keep thinking of this storyteller because you and I both have this really strong desire to connect with people
yeah.
and to make some profound difference inside of people in some way, whether it's through your photographs. For me, it's whether it's in conversations or teaching. And so I guess what I'm thinking is, how do we encourage your generation, the generation coming up behind you who is so locked into their devices? Like, how do we keep...
Generation X, were they...
I don't know who they're going to be.
Second attention span.
Yes. How do we keep the art of storytelling alive, sitting around the fire? You know, how do we keep exciting people? Whether they never travel to any of these exotic places, but maybe they do an overnight in Montana de Oro, mm-hmm. right? And then just coming back and telling the story. How do you see passing that gift on?
I think that you incite, you know, you have to have a reason to want to do it. That's the reality. It's like no amount of me being like, put your phone down and you know, look at the flowers. It's like, or this and that. When I go on workshops, like I think of it a lot. Like when I'm parenting, mm-hmm. you know, I'm always thinking of a way to like make my son feel a little uncomfortable. You know, like last night we climbed around the trees in Pismo and these like, you know, like trees, the eucalyptus trees that really grow really low to the sand. And, you know, my kids were climbing up and one of my youngest son, he's like, fearless, you know, he climbs up to where I am, and I'm like, good, you know, it's awesome. My older son is fearful, you know, about it, and he climbs up, and he gets to a certain point, he's like, get me down. I'm like, no, I'm not gonna, you got up, you get down, and like, little triumphs, little tiny things, like, and so they learn, hopefully, to crave that experience, you know, whether it's jumping off a big rock into the ocean, or diving into the water, and anything that you think you can't do that you can, you know, like, it's a funny thing, I'm no different. Last night, I challenge myself to swim 2 miles. I've never swam 2 miles. I suck at swimming. Like I almost drowned basically.
In the pool or in the ocean?
And okay. I did it, but I was like, oh cool. Like I've always wanted to do that. And that's just one little feather in your cap. You know, like how many days of the week do we go through experiences where we do the same thing, same repetition, same this, eat the same deal, you know, watch the same, you know, it's like, it's slowly dying, you know? And I think that in many ways, I would aim to want to inspire younger generations or those around me to seek out stuff like that, you know? Like when somebody tells me like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this epic road trip of, you know, they stop in my office, I'm doing this epic road trip of California, I've got all these spots mapped out. I'm like, great. I'm like, so are you making time to stop at the places in between, you know? Because it's like this analogy. I'll be driving in the morning, right? It'll be really early. The sun will be rising. And I'll be sitting in my car and I'm thinking, okay, I got to get to this beach by this sunlight, by this sunrise. And I'm looking out the window and the sun is rising over Bishop's Peak and it's just the craziest sunset I've ever seen. Right? I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish my camera was next to me. And I get to the beach and I realize that when I'm there, it's kind of whatever. It's kind of like what I've seen 1,000 times before. Mm-hmm. And I realize that I've just thought about this a lot, but like that moment that passed me by, I should have stopped. Mm-hmm. You know, there's never going to be I'm going to get that on the second time around or whatever. Like the moment is now, like this is it. Like there's never going to be like it'll look like that on the way back or, I should have, would have, could, you know what I mean? Like, I think that that is like one of the biggest things that I hope that our generation learns. And I try to do my best to talk about that, teach that. If you want to call it preaching, great. You know, I really hope it doesn't sound like that, but that we need to like, take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves right now. And I think that the first step is getting the people out into nature and to realizing and understanding how absolutely small we are compared to everything else. And that maybe there is a language that we can learn to communicate in the outdoors that goes beyond, you know, words.
Well, I keep, you know, I don't know if you can tell where my brain is going because I keep circling around trying to.
Your eyes are like spinning in circles.
No, yeah, I feel like it. Yeah. But I'm just like, part of me is trying to define, you know, a little bit of what motivates you and going back to the mission statement piece, you know, mm-hmm. that mission statement. What is it that we define ourselves by? Because I think that's the message that I'm always trying to help my clients, my students get, is to find that thing that is unique to them. And for you, I feel when in our conversations that it's that pushing yourself, going to where you never thought you could, seeing something, feeling a little frightened. And maybe that's the message that for all people, their level of what is frightening is it's different. And so for your son, it's climate.
Approachable adventure is where it's at. Like approachable adventure. I mean, it's not really about climbing Everest.
Right. And that I think that's what people get confused is that they think that the adventure has to be 6 years from now save money.
When somebody summited Everest, they didn't start there.
Right.
Right. It started by the first time they put crampons on their shoes and walked on ice, mm-hmm. or the first time they just visited Alaska and looked at a peak and were like, that is big, I'd love to do that, when they were young, right? You're absolutely right. Money is such an absolutely dumb barrier that we have created to put our goals between ourselves and make distance, right?
Like, and to think that we aren't actually living until we're doing the thing we're working toward.
The reality is, like, you know, it's awesome that I'm able to have a business and travel and all these things and go to these places. But the very first project I ever did was traveling 50 days in a California bus, in a Volkswagen bus, you know, a Westie, up and down the California coast. You mentioned it. That was because I had literally never seen my own backyard.
Right.
You know, what did that take? A couple, you know, $100 in gas and burritos and parking tickets? Like, I'm sorry, but if you hold an iPhone in your hand, you could probably do that trip at some point in your life. That showed me more than I ever could have known. You know, being in people's homes and up in Northern California and just seeing the way they lived really simply off the grid, and going to these cold, foggy beaches, you know, and just seeing this rawness that I never even knew was there. And that trip inspired everything. I was waking up with the sun, shooting photos, going to bed with the sun, shooting photos. I lived and breathed through my camera, and my camera became a way to filter this really complicated world as a kid who had never traveled anywhere. And, you know, I always look at this like that book that I made, I didn't have a book deal. I didn't have anything. I literally just did it and hoped and prayed that it was going to happen, and it did. And that was one of the most successful projects I've ever done. It still sells the most copies of any surf book I think ever published through Chronicle. So there's something to be said for that. And I don't think that money needs to be a barrier to do it.
And the way that we can push ourselves in those simple things, the story you told about your son climbing the tree and then overcoming the fear of coming back down. I mean, it's just every day that challenging and making our stories become bigger.
You're right. And the sad thing is, most people I know that are pretty wealthy are some of the most complacent people that I know.
Right. And the saddest and most depressed. And that's the thing, is that we've told people that your ultimate glory will be when you make all this money. And yet when we look statistically, the more people have, the more unhappy they are.
The more antidepressants they're on.
Exactly.
The more of that. The reality is, like, it is. And you know what's funny is that when you have
the means,
more of a budget, the means, and you travel, you go to great lengths to make it safer.
Yes.
Pad it. Make it this. You have your insurance. You leave any room for what? Uncertainty.
Exactly.
To exist. And then when you take out the uncertainty, you're pretty much guaranteed. You know, without the risk, there's never going to be any joy. You know, you need both.
So I think that's a TED Talk too.
Road tripping with my two favorite allies.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. As my hour with Chris Burkhart winds down, we shift gears to the topic of climate change and its impact on his professional and personal life.
Can we talk about climate change a little bit?
Sure, it's not a topic I'm super excited about, but...
But you have two young sons, and you're out in the world. How are you feeling about that? I mean, is there a part of you that's trying to keep a happy face and you're terrified underneath? Like, where are you on that topic?
You know, it's funny because I feel pretty strongly about climate change, that it's a buzzword, and that it creates more walls than bridges.
Okay. And tell me why.
The reason is because climate change, like I said, if you go to somebody in China, you go to somebody in Africa, and you speak to a global audience, and you try to tell them about the beauty of a glacier and that it's melting and this and that, you could talk to your nosebleeds. They're never going to care at all. It's this privileged American mentality, sadly, mostly liberal mentality, that makes us think that, oh, yeah, this is what we need to talk about because everybody needs to get on board with that. Well, what is that the root of it all? Pollution. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to live in pollution.
Population,
you know, a lot of factors that everybody can relate to. So why aren't we talking about those? Because they're not buzzwords, because they aren't reaching the headlines of the news, right? And so to me, it's like, you don't live in Greenland. You're not subsistence hunting on the ice. Yes, you're going to experience it. You know, your kids are probably. But the truth of the matter is, what do you experience? Every time I drive in Los Angeles, I feel the weight of the pollution, or in Miami, or I'm in Salt Lake City. You know, that bums me out. It affects me every time I travel somewhere. When I drive my car and I make a choice that I'm using gasoline, you know, I bought a diesel vehicle so I could, and I ride my bike a lot, you know, and, you know, it's funny too, because I always think about this, you know, I come from multiple sides. My wife, her side of the family is very, very liberal. My dad's side of the family, my parents are very conservative, and my dad never travels, never goes anywhere. You know, he grows flowers and he's a landscaper and raises bees and one of the most conservative people I know. But in the end, it's like, who's leaving a larger carbon footprint? Mm-hmm. Am I? Yeah, I am. Do I care about the environment? Oh, immensely, a lot. Am I leaving a larger carbon footprint? Oh, hell yeah, for sure. And in the grand scheme of things, it's like you have to look at your actions. And I just feel like in many ways, if I could take every single person on Earth to go see a beautiful glacier, they might all be moved, that they can relate to. And I think that that is the way that I've always seen climate change, whatever you want to put it, just global warming in mm-hmm. general, or
climate weirdness.
Global weirdness. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, it's gotten hot, it's gotten cold. I absolutely agree. We are affecting climate change, or we are accelerating it to 100%. But do 151 different politicians need to take private jets to fly somewhere to agree that it's happening?
Right.
A good idea? I don't quite know. But I do know that if we can start to see on equal terms and be like, hey, what do I want? I want sustainable vehicles. My office is solar. Is it a goal of mine to get my family off the grid? Do we try to live in a way where we're doing that? Yeah. You know, are we trying to use less single-use plastics? There's a lot of other things out there that I feel like will benefit that. Am I vegetarian? Am I vegan?
Are yes, you?
I am.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, I'm not here to judge how you eat, nor do I care. But that's the hard thing, is that what people want to do is they want to point the finger at somebody else because of how they choose to sin differently than you do.
Oh, I like that line, how they choose to sin. But you didn't answer my question though. Are you worried for the future that your sons are growing into? Will you raise them differently because of the changes in the world?
Oh, no.
No? You know, okay.
I'm going to raise them to be the best humans they can. Like, you can't raise your kids. I can't raise my kids any differently than I was raised, because mm-hmm. I want them to have the same joys and experience, you know? Mm-hmm. Does that mean that we're going to, I don't know, burn kerosene lanterns? I don't know. I don't know what would be a good analogy.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I wonder, should we be teaching? Because I have a grandchild now. So in my head, I'm like, should I be teaching her to be a survivalist?
Inadvertently, you know, we are training our kids to obviously, like, you know, don't use single-use plastics.
Right.
They see what we do, mm-hmm. you know? And so the reality is, you don't, like, raise your kid. You raise yourself, and your kid follows suit. You know, I have to remind myself, like, oh gosh, like, you know, don't, like, make sure to use a water bottle, you know, that's reusable, so they understand that that's important. You know, why do we have what does the green symbol on our car mean? Oh, it means that, you know, the car is eco-friendly or whatever it is. You know, why do we have chickens? Why do we have ducks? You know, why do we have property that we try to work? I think that it's one of those things where, like, a lot of these things that I don't really enjoy doing, I have to do. But I don't think that it's a hard one, because I don't really trust the education system to raise my children. I want to make sure that they understand. For me, I think that the greatest gift we can ever give our kids is to travel, to see what's out there, and to form their own opinion.
And for me, it's making sure my kids and my...
I don't want to be an alarmist, is all.
No, and I totally get that, because I don't want to be an alarmist, right. But I also don't want to be a head-in-the-sand person.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, for me, my job is to make sure my children have the resilience
yeah.
to adapt to whatever comes their way, and to not be fooled into thinking that life is Disneyland. It goes back to that thing,
right.
that there is some reality checks that I think everyone needs to have, is that just because you can get on a ship and go look at something through glass doesn't mean you're safe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that the greatest thing, I've talked to my wife about this, as a father, the absolute greatest thing I hope to instill in my kids, I just don't want to pass on an inherent fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
A willingness to explore, to experiment, to ask questions, to be inquisitive, and to, you know, like, go and seek out experiences and not be fearful. It's fear that has forced so many of us into making uneducated decisions.
Sanitized decisions. I think you just hit on the whole thing, is that maybe really your storytelling is about helping people not fear the unknown, right. because we're moving into a future that is more unknown than ever before.
Right. Well, it's funny, because, like, you know, like I said before, no accolade I've ever received has been greater than when I was standing on a beach somewhere in the middle of the world, middle of nowhere, right, in the Arctic somewhere, and this couple came up to me, and they're like, hey, are you Chris Burkhardt? Like, oh, we came here because we saw one of your photos. And I was like, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And the power of the photograph and the power of words, you know, really dawned on me that, like, this person booked a ticket. They traveled outside of their comfort zone. They went way outside of what they're used to just to see this place, because they were moved by it. And that They probably became changed because of that. Mm-hmm. You know, but one of the biggest, I think, falsehoods that we have sold ourselves is that we all want to travel to become someone new. We all want to go and become a different person, a different whatever, gain a different mindset, right, if you will. Well, the issue is that all of that change happens before you leave your front door. You don't simply become a different person by going somewhere, you know? Like you said, you can jump on a ship and watch it behind glass. Mm-hmm. It starts when you leave your front door. It decides like how you're going to view that experience and what you're going to do when you get there and how you're going to, you know, allow this to affect you, mm-hmm. you know?
I love your message of life happening in the unknown. And we call it the liminal space because, you know, people hold on to their known reality because it's safe and comfortable. And yet it causes them to go into states of depression or anxiety or mm-hmm. feeling restless. And they know there's something out there, but they don't know how to get there.
Because we're used to dealing with fight or flight every couple of days.
All the time.
Every couple of hours.
Right. You know? But how do we help people get comfortable with that liminal space?
It starts really small.
Yeah.
It starts as a kid, you know, realizing that someone's not going to help you down from a tree limb and you have to get yourself down and you feel tiny, tiny, tiny feelings of accomplishment because somebody didn't baby you, because mm-hmm. somebody didn't coddle you, because somebody gave you real, actual pats on the back when it was deserved and needed and love and support and told you you could do anything, you know, and then supported you through that.
And I imagine without the support of your wife, a lot of this would not be as pleasurable.
It wouldn't be worthwhile, you know? What would I be doing it for? You yeah. know, like it's, and that's the motivation too, is having besides a mission statement, having a purpose, you know, someone to feel like you're doing it all for is really helpful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the Programs tab. You can also subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts or NPR One. Search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can reach me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can always be part of the conversation on our Facebook page. As always, I appreciate you listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.